Kim Ives for joining us. Kim Ives is the editor of Haiti Progress, and we were speaking about the emergent situation in Haiti with him. We've reached the end of the show. You've been listening to Global Movements, Urban Struggles. I'm Biju Matthew, and co-hosting the show with Deepa Fernandez. Technical support, as usual, of the same brilliant variety was provided by Errol Maitland. Thanks, and see you again next Tuesday.
Thank you, Biju, for those kind words. Just put them in an envelope and I'll take it to the supermarket. Thank you so much. I'll even try getting a ride on the subway. And you tune again to WBAI 99.5 FM. Coming up next, Ecologic. Please stay tuned.
Hi, this is Gil Scott Heron, unknown bluesologist. Speaking to you on Free Speech Radio, WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. Stay here.
Working on a forklift in the night shift.
This is Danny Glover. I'm calling on everyone within reach of my voice to join me on October 17th at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. for the Million Worker March. We are united labor with the anti-war movement and all struggles for social justice. We demand well-paid full-time work for all, universal health care, decent schools, social services, and an immediate end to the occupation of Iraq. All that we as workers have gained is under attack by rulers who seek to destroy our democratic rights. Come together, brothers and sisters. On October 17th, we shall launch a great united movement to reshape America. Contact Brenda Stokely at 212-219-0022. Get your tickets for the September 24th New York rally and fundraiser. I'll be there. Check out www.millionworkermarch.org.
Coming up is Ecologic with Ken Gale. We're going to be talking about global warming and the Ice Age and how they're related to one another. Stay tuned.
There's a change in the climate. There's a change in the air. Changes are happening everywhere. Are we ready to notice? Do we dare to be aware? How can we change the atmosphere and show that we care? By now we've heard the call, but do we heed the warning? Do we look at Peter Pan and Santa Claus? The same way we look at global warming. Science or by the words of industry? Can we look at what we do individually? How can we make a difference? Each one do our part to cool the rising tides of warming. Each one make a start. Oh, sometimes I feel like I'm standing by myself, though I know we're all in this together. Hey, let's not talk about global warming, no, no. Let's just talk about the weather. Now, there is no magic potion, but I know that there's a plan. We can save our skies and oceans, our forests and our land. But to reach the ears of Congress, we're gonna have to shout. The animals and trees can't, so we've got to work this out. Oh, sometimes I feel like I'm standing by myself, though I know we're all in this together. But hey, let's not talk about global warming, no. Just talk about the weather. Here comes the rap.
The Kyoto Treaty is reliable. It's economically viable, but the senators won't ratify, and the world is standing by. Waiting for U.S. action, feeling the earth's dissatisfaction. You're supposed to represent us, not choke us and cement us. So come on, Senate, ratify, so more people don't have to die. The coral reefs are steeped in grief. The ozone's feeling incomplete. The glaciers are disappearing. And who is the thief? Big Gun's saying, you won't worry so much, you worry warts. You worry just because you're wearing shorts in New York in December. Well, I'll tell you what you can do with your CO2, your fluorocarbon jogging, and your coal-burning soul. Your carbon dioxide is not your best side, so open wide and take what Mother Nature just won't take in stride. It's a long-term friendship threatening to end. I will not let this happen. I will fight to defend this earth. You are so important to me. I will keep you safe and healthy, and you'll do the same for me. Oh, sometimes I feel like I'm standing by myself, though I know we're all in this together. Global warming, no, no. Let's just talk about the weather. Let's just talk about the weather. Why don't we talk about the weather?
And that was Sharon Abreu. And, that song is not released yet. It'll be on her next CD. So look for it. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. And it's Ecologic. We alternate with Create Your Healthy Home every Tuesday at 11 a.m. until Gary Null at noon. And usually I mention news first and have announcements second. This time I'm reversing the order because my last news segment has to do with today's show. I've got a lot of good news this month. One is Russia signed the Kyoto Protocol just last week. I suppose it's up to your own cynicism to decide whether the Bush administration feels any pressure to also sign on. Fortune magazine, of all places, is backing renewable energy. Senior writer Nick Vertraver said the goal is a real-world plan that won't derail the economy and has a strong chance of political success. The cost can be offset by eliminating current subsidies and giveaways. They have four approaches. One is improving fuel economy, such as using hybrid cars and eliminating several subsidies for the oil and gas industries, whose profits don't seem to justify government handouts. Alternative fuels, such as hydrogen and a biomass fuel called cellulosic ethanol for cars. Redoubled commitment to efficiency. We can enjoy our current lifestyle, but use much less power in the process. And getting serious about solar and wind. Many experts believe that wind and solar could eventually shoulder 20% of the electricity burden. Fortune believes it's 10%. Either way, the government will have to show more support. And by the end of the late 70s, the United States was ahead of the world in renewable energy. And that changed in 1981, and the rest of the world is leading us like crazy. Los Angeles Mayor James K. Hahn has directed the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power to immediately end all commitments with the Utah coal-fired power plant and use the money for green energy purchases to help meet the city's goal of 20% renewable energy by 2017. The result is the prevention of nearly 7 million tons of global warming pollution per year. And John Culpepper, you may remember him from this show several months ago, of the Lower Washington Heights Neighborhood Association, will be operating their EPA-approved, privately-owned air monitor at the corner of 14th Street and 1st Avenue until 4 p.m. today. He's already gotten started on it. You can watch the monitor in action and feel free to ask questions. That's 14th Street and 1st Avenue until 4 p.m. today. And this evening, from 6:30 to 8 p.m., the Neighborhood Energy Network is discussing actions you can do to lower energy use, which means cleaner air and lower electric bills, such as greening neighborhood blocks. Go to Open Road, 420 East 12th Street in Manhattan. Open Road is a community garden on East 12th Street between 1st Avenue and Avenue A. Or go to their website, www.neighborhoodenergynetwork.org. On Monday, October 25th, from 7 to 9:30 p.m., a neighborhood energy forum in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. That's the fourth one that the Neighborhood Energy Network has organized. So this one's in Greenpoint. Each one's been in a different neighborhood. There's a lot going on in this field. Learn what New York is doing with wind, solar, energy conservation, and other alternative means to provide energy. There are new developments nearly every week. Find out what you can do now, today. Speakers include experts in energy issues, the solar and wind industry, and the New York State Energy Resource and Development Authority. That's at the Brooklyn Brewery, 79 North 11th Street in Brooklyn. That's 79 North 11th Street in Brooklyn. You can get more information from their website, brooklynbrewery.com. The New York City Audubon's first program is Wednesday, October 13th at 6 p.m. It's at the Lighthouse at 59th Street between Lexington and Park Avenue. The author of A New Peterson Field Guide to North American Prairies is their guest. The program is free, and you can get more information by calling 212-691-7483 or go to www.nycas.org. NYCAS, New York City Audubon Society. It's Wednesday, October 13th. There's an expiring exhibit from the Municipal Arts Society called Green Maps of New York and the World. It's at the Urban Gallery, 457 Madison Avenue at 51st Street in Manhattan. Admission is free, and the gallery is open every day except Thursday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. For more information about special events associated with the exhibit, check out www.greenmaps.org. Greenmaps, one word, .org. You can call 212-674-1631. 212-674-1631. And they're having a forum on sustainable education and mapping on Wednesday, October 13th, the same evening as the Audubon program I mentioned. So there is a lot going on. And less from science news this week than usual. W. James Gouderman of the University of Southern California in Los Angeles have done a study that shows that spending childhood with polluted air stalls lung development roughly as much as does having a mother who smokes. Teens who have grown up in towns with the dirtiest air were up to five times as likely to have lower lung function. Airborne carbon, nitrogen dioxide, acid vapors, and particulate matter contributed to the diminished lung capacity. Those pollutants come mainly from cars and trucks. Boys and girls, teen smokers and non-smokers, and kids with and without asthma are equally susceptible. For more information, check out the September 9th issue of the New England Journal of Medicine. That's the September 9th issue. And last but not least, this is from the September 1st Environmental Science and Technology. Mountains of decomposing garbage release about 10 million metric tons of methane each year in the United States alone. To reduce gas from landfills, communities should start treating them more like backyard gardens. The current process is to cover garbage with soil, which keeps odors and rat populations down, but using compost laden with microbes could have the additional benefit of reducing methane emissions. And why is that irrelevant to today's show? Because methane is a greenhouse gas. It's contributing to global warming. And our guest today is
Tom Weissmuller.
Oh, wait a minute. I should turn on your microphone before I ask you to speak, shouldn't I? Okay, just try that again.
Hi, I'm Tom Weissmuller.
And you are?
Well, I'm involved in global warming. I lecture on global warming quite frequently. I have a book in production called The Colder Side of Global Warming. I have training as a meteorologist, and I've done a lot of other things in my life. But this is a very important issue.
And I guess you're retired from NASA, right?
That's right.
So is global warming, does it exist or not?
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
How do we know it really exists?
Well, first of all, there are a couple of misconceptions that people have about global warming. Number one, they think it's something that just happened 3 weeks ago or a couple of decades ago. It actually started over 100,000 years ago with the melting of the last giant glaciers that covered the Northern Hemisphere. Now, I personally believe that mankind has rapidly accelerated global warming in the last few hundred years, but this is a trend that's been going on for 100,000 already. We used to have a 2-mile-high ice sheet, which ended on Long Island. Long Island is the rubble that the last ice sheet pushed forward. And the southern part of Long Island, and the flat portion, is called an outwash plain, where the water just flows off the glacier and is nice and flat.
And if you drive along Hillside Avenue in Queens, you can actually see the difference between...
That's right. You are literally driving on the terminal moraine of that last glacier. And you have to imagine when you're on the Grand Central Parkway looking down on Long Island, that on your left, if you're heading east, is a 2-mile-high ice sheet.
And on your right is all the rubble that ice sheet has been pushing for miles and miles and miles.
That's right.
And so that was 100,000 years ago, you said?
Yeah, over 100,000 years ago. And this, you have to imagine, with all this water locked up in these mile-high ice sheets, miles high, actually, as you get closer to the pole, sea levels were quite low. And as the ice melted, sea levels slowly rose. Eventually, the Mediterranean, which used to be a lake, became connected to the Atlantic Ocean. And that breakthrough when the ice melted there may have caused the biblical floods. Is this kind of apocryphal type history? Nobody really knows some of these sources. But the fact is, sea levels have been rising. And the polar cap is shrinking. And we have some very definite measurements that show that it is shrinking at a very rapid rate.
Now, what does rapid mean? I know when geologists talk about rapid, they don't mean the same thing that you and I mean when we talk about rapid.
Well, when I was a kid, people were telling me that the ice sheet on the pole was maybe 50 or 100 feet thick. Turns out during 1957-58, during the International Geophysical Year, they did some really good measurements of the ice cap. And on average, it was about 10 feet thick. It's a lot thinner than most people have thought. A few years ago, a scientist by the name of Rothrock and a group did another study using submarine data from submarines that crisscross the pole and go underneath it, and they found out that the ice cap was down to the last 6 feet on average and melting.
Now, how do the submarines know this from underneath?
Okay, they use something called upward-seeking sonar. They sail under the ice cap, they bounce sound waves off the ice above them so that their conning towers don't hit the chunks of ice that protrude a little bit further down. They're called keels. And, of course, they have regular sonar. Which
so, like, you know, it's like a stalactite in a cave?
Exactly.
Bits of ice hanging down low, so the submarines have to know where they are.
Right. So they're very, very conscious of that because that could do a job on your periscope. And in the 1990s... The United States and Russia agreed to release the ice depth data from all submarines crossing the polar cap. This was a breakthrough. On this side, Vice President Gore was the person on this side of the Atlantic who really pushed this. And this data is now released. It's on the Internet. Anybody can look at it. And the fact is the cap is melting. It's melting, and you said what's rapid, what's not rapid. 2 to 4 inches per year is disappearing from the ice cap.
And we're down to about 6 feet.
Under 6 feet.
Under
now.
6 feet.
Less than 6 feet. Now, a couple of years ago, the Russians were trying to earn hard cash. So what they said, hey,
they're still trying to earn hard cash.
Right. Well, so they said, why don't we use one of our icebreakers and earn some money with it? And what they did annually, they would take passengers who would pay between $10,000 and $15,000 each to go on a Russian icebreaker that would literally plow through to the North Pole. They let people off, and they walk around, and they can say, I stood at the North Pole. And these icebreakers don't cut through the ice. They literally go on top of it, and it breaks apart underneath. Well, 2 years ago, 4 years ago, an icebreaker went up to the pole, and they found they couldn't let anybody out because the ice, these plates of ice had separated into what they call a lead. You couldn't walk on the pole because it was open water. Now, open water at the top of the world was almost inconceivable. They had to sail about 4 or 5 miles away and then let people off and say, well, at least I was close to the pole.
Right, you sailed over it.
Right, they didn't give any refunds either. But the fact is there are now leads on the polar cap. There is a slush atmosphere up there, and it is being melted, ironically, not by sunlight, but from underneath. From underneath by warm water ocean currents that come up between Greenland and Spitsbergen. Spitsbergen is a Danish-owned island about 300 miles from Greenland. There's a deep canyon that allows the Gulf Stream literally to go underneath the pole.
So if you imagine Greenland, you have Canada on one side and Spitsbergen on the other, and this warm current is going
right
there.
Right. And you have a bigger area between Norway and Spitsbergen, and there's a little island in the middle called Bear Island, but this is over a very shallow part of the Atlantic. There's not a lot of heat transfer and water transfer going on, but the Greenland-Spitsbergen channel is deep, admits lots of warm water, and that warm water slowly but surely is eroding the ice cap.
Well, how come that hasn't been going on all along? So why didn't the ice cap melt hundreds of years ago?
Well, it actually melted thousands and thousands of years ago. But once the glaciers came down, the sea levels dropped. There was no more warm water coming up, and the ice cap was able to...
So when the sea level is low enough, this warm water can't get through.
Exactly. And then the ice cap freezes. Now, a scientist, one of America's greatest scientists, the name of Maurice Ewing, 50 years ago, figured out what that process was. By training, he was an oceanographer. Most scientists in their lifetime, they may write 10 to 20 peer-reviewed papers. Mm-hmm. Maurice Ewing wrote 350. He was a prolific researcher. He and his fellow Will Dunn at the Lamont Laboratories Columbia has across the river did this study and realized that during the Ice Age, the Arctic Ocean was open. This is very counterintuitive. We're about to see that opening up happen again, and the consequences are very interesting. By the way, another misconception a lot of people have is that, my gosh, if the polar cap is going to melt, sea levels are going to rise, and we're all going to be flooded. When the Arctic melts, there'll be very little change in sea level, and the reason is it's already floating. It's already displacing almost all the water it will displace. Sea levels may go up an inch or two, but that's it.
So imagine the ice in a glass of your favorite beverage. If it melts, the beverage doesn't overflow.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, that's not true with the Antarctic ice cap. If that would melt, it would flood the coastal areas of the world. But that's not going to happen very
quickly. How about the ice shelves? Like, we know that the Antarctic ice shelves are breaking off and melting.
Yes, they are huge chunks.
Is that considered land ice or sea ice?
No. For instance, the Ross ice shelf actually is sea ice already. It's already over water. But there are chunks that calve off, that's the word, from the land. And yes... but these are small chunks of ice.
And then all the glaciers that have melted.
Yes. Those don't represent lots of volume, but if you go to Glacier National Park, for instance, there are people who will take the same picture from the same standpoint years at a time. I've got one set of pictures for the Grinnell Glacier around 1910. It covered 430 acres of this is frozen ice. In 1931, it was down to 287 acres.
So it's about almost half the size.
Right. 1998, it's down to 180. It's almost gone.
And that melting has accelerated.
Yes.
It took a lot less to go from 400 to 200 and something. It went from 200 and something to 100.
Well, in the last 200 years, carbon dioxide levels have quadrupled. Quadrupled. We used to have, on average, for the last 1,000 years, about 280 parts per million carbon dioxide for every given cubic foot of air. Not anymore. Now we're up to 400 concentration parts per million. Temperatures have skyrocketed. Average temperatures in the last 14 years, 11 of those 14 years in succession were the warmest year ever. It is literally going off the chart. Now, you can say,
so every year is the warmest year, and then next year breaks that record, and then the next year breaks that record. And
yes, except for when Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines erupted in 1992. There was a three-year period where there was a slight cool down, And in 1996, that was...
Because the amount of ash from the volcano was so thick that it actually blocked sunlight and cooled the Earth.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, when you meteorologists use words like, you know, the global change in temperature, an individual living in the same place the whole time may say, well, it was colder this winter than last winter. So why? How can you tell me that it's warmer this winter than last winter?
Well, we try to measure it all over the Earth. Yes, in one part of the country, it may be very cold. Last winter was fairly cold for the Northeast. It was also fairly warm for the West. But on average, the temperature slightly rose last winter over the entire world.
Over the whole world.
Right. And we measure...
Now, why do we care about the whole world?
Well, it's the only home we have. And global effects, like global warming, have far-reaching consequences. And I think hopefully I'll get into some of those consequences in a few minutes. The ice cap, by the way, people say, well, it's only melting in one spot. How about the other spots? We have sounding data over the entire Arctic that consistently show that the what they call the mean draft, which is the difference between sea level and the lowest part of the ice, has been cut in half over the last 30 years. The mean draft used to be about 10 to 12 feet. Now it's down to 6 to 4 to 3 feet. And I can go to Chukchi Cap, the Beaufort Sea, the Canada Basin, so the North Pole, all over the
Arctic. So there's lots of proof done in different ways that the Earth is getting warmer, climate is changing. I've read countless articles on various species that are changing their ranges due to this climate change.
Well, a good example is the polar bear. The polar bears used to walk easily from land to ice cap and off. They can't do that anymore in the summer. If they're out on the ice cap, they then end up retreating far away from land. They can never get back to land. They hunt seals. They're still doing okay as far as that goes, but their environment has changed radically. On the north slope of Alaska, where they're drilling for oil right now, there is no snow in the summer. It is dry land. It is open tundra, literally hundreds of miles, but if only a few hundred miles from the North Pole itself. Snows in the winter, and it gets cold again, but it's...
Well, now, what is the relationship between all of this and, say, the massive hurricanes that we've had this year?
This year, we had a number of hurricanes. I don't think there's a direct tie-in between the global warming and the hurricanes. The hurricanes are slightly stronger because the oceans are slightly warmer. And the warmer the water, the stronger the hurricanes.
So there's global warming.
So there is, yes, there is a connection, but you can't pinpoint any given year and say, well, this year we're going to have a record hurricane year. The increases on average are slight. The hurricanes are slightly more powerful, but not enough to, you know, really say, you know, this is an emergency. We have a different kind of emergency going on.
So when you talk about the 14 years where, except for three of them, it got warmer every single year globally,
yeah.
Were the hurricanes getting more powerful every single year at the same time?
I don't know the answer. From what I read in the newspapers, we've had some pretty powerful storms recently. But any given storm depends on many, many other meteorological factors, the evaporation on the ocean, the cloud cover, mm-hmm. and other factors. We have a lot of hurricanes. 3 years ago, they had a whole bunch in the Pacific, the typhoons. We didn't have too many here. The world, it's a big world. But the polar regions affect the rest of the world, right, because the big heat transfer mechanism from the tropics to the poles is, number one, the ocean, number two, the atmosphere, and actually hurricanes are a heat transfer mechanism too, because what they do is they take water that the sun evaporates in the equatorial regions. It condenses into water vapor, which is clear. It's part of the atmosphere. You can't see through it. When it gets transported north and it condenses into the clouds that we can see, that heat is then released. It's called latent heat of condensation. And it helps move that heat from the equator toward the poles. Each of these storms is an amazing heat transfer in the mm-hmm. atmosphere, heading toward the poles. They always head north, and they go up toward the polar regions. Of course, the ocean and the Gulf Stream is a never-ending heat transport mechanism, too, that sends heat toward the poles.
And as the hurricane goes, it starts near Africa, and then it moves west along the water and builds up power and builds up moisture and grows as it goes across the water.
Right. It gets actually taken over by the trade winds, which are a constant east-to-west wind flow around the equator, and it's strictly due to the rotation of the Earth. And the spin that hurricanes develop also is a function of the rotation of the Earth. In fact, as the hurricane moves further north, it will spin faster. So the trade winds push it over to the west toward the Caribbean, and its northerly movement accelerates the spin. So by the time it gets to the islands in the Caribbean and Cuba and Florida, it is spinning. The eye is spinning at a very, very rapid rate. So, and, of course, the heat is being liberated in these tons of clouds and rain that is dropping on the on America.
And this happens at the end of summer because the heat is the strongest then. The heat has been building in the ocean during the summer.
Well, there is a zone called the Intertropical Convergence Zone, which moves, actually lags the sun. The sun is at its most northerly point, actually, on June 21st. Mm-hmm. But
the beginning of summer.
Right. But the heat lag follows that. So the Intertropical Convergence Zone in September is actually at its furthest northerly point, and that's when you get these convergence of winds that start the hurricane spinning. It's the initial spin that forms that first impetus, and it usually happens by these thunderstorms coming off the coast of Africa near the equator.
And so, okay, so now we know that there's global warming. There's absolute proof from melting ice to the actual temperatures of the atmosphere.
Oh, sure. And by the way, we didn't have monks in the seminaries taking carbon dioxide samples 1,000 years ago, but we do have the ability to punch an ice core down through the Greenland ice cap, and we can literally, as the ice melts, determine the content of the atmosphere in any given year, and those years are very, very highly correlated. So we do know that in the year 1357 there was 280 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the air, without having anybody in those days even know what carbon dioxide was. So the evidence is there.
There's an amazing amount of data.
Yes.
By a lot of different scientific disciplines. Now, early in the show, you talked about how this is causing an ice age, which I'm sure a lot of people are going, well, how is all this warming going to give us an ice age? And let's have a little musical statement from Joni Mitchell, and then we'll explain how all of this will give us some ice.
A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. Charge the people $1.50 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Go, that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone?
they paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
And that was Joni Mitchell's Big Yellow Taxi. And I'm Ken Gale. This is Ecologic on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. And my guest has been and will be until Gary Null at noon, Time Weissmuller, retired meteorologist from NASA, who's been lecturing on global warming for years.
That's right. Now, one of the neat things, I also just finished a term as president of NYU's Alumni Association. And in so doing, I get to hang around with some top-caliber professors. And our current institute at NYU is undergoing this project of mathematically modeling the climate of the world, which is an incredibly complex problem. We have a Professor Holland who's trying to get his hands around this and literally make that data available to the world. There's an awful lot of research going on now that will help amplify the things I'm mentioning. Now, you asked about an ice age, and that's very counterintuitive. Well, my goodness, if you're going to heat the planet up, how can you talk about an ice age? Let me explain it in this way. If you know people who lived in Buffalo or have been in Rochester or Syracuse in the wintertime, in early winter, when the first really cold air blows across the Great Lakes, which are still unfrozen, that cold air will strip moisture from the lakes and dump it on the surrounding land in the form of snow.
So the same way that the hurricanes are gathering moisture as they go across the Atlantic from Africa to the Caribbean.
Exactly.
So are these storms gathering moisture going across Lake Erie or Lake Ontario?
That's correct.
And up there they call that lake effect snow.
Right. Now, Watertown, New York gets over 200 inches of snow each year. And this lake effect stops, by the way, when the lakes freeze. When the lakes freeze, it still snows there, but then the moisture source might be the Atlantic Ocean. It's carried inland. But the lakes themselves are no longer a moisture source.
In other words, they have the same weather everybody else has.
Yes.
Because it's the water is under the ice, so therefore, as the winds go across the ice, they're not gathering that much moisture.
Exactly.
Like if there was no ice there.
Now, the distance across open water that wind can blow to catch this moisture is called a fetch. During in the Great Lakes, the fetch is at best maybe 100 or 150 miles long. You have to imagine if the Arctic polar cap melts, then the fetch is 2,000 miles long. And cold wind, and believe me, the wind is cold up there, it's 60 below, will still pick up enormous, copious amounts of moisture and dump it on the surrounding territory.
So you'll have, instead of lake effect snow, you'll have ocean effect snow.
Right. Arctic ocean effect snow, and that cold blowing snow will just literally accumulate around the Arctic, literally forming a fairly substantial snow mountain over the years. Now, eventually, the polar cap...
How many years are we talking about?
Well, once the polar cap melts, it refreezes every winter. We have what we call pack ice. Pack ice is relatively thin. It's slushy. It disappears in the summer. If you send a satellite over the pole in the summer, you are then left with what is really left of the ice cap, which is quite shrunk. The Canadians now, every year, do a Northwest Passage in what used to be an icebreaker, but they don't need it because they don't encounter ice anymore.
So that ice used to be there in the summer as well,
yes.
And now it is not.
That's correct. It reforms in the winter, and again, along the coast of northern Alaska, when it starts getting colder around now, it snows a lot because there is now a moisture source for that snow to...
So when we're talking about ocean effect snow, that would happen in the beginning of the winter, not toward the end of winter.
That's correct. That's correct. And winter is long up there, all right? So winter ends in May and June. And for the first couple of years, you're going to get a fair amount of snow accumulating on the shores of the Arctic. Then it will stop when the Arctic freezes. It will, when it melts again, you'll get more snow accumulating. But the net effect
When it melts again, that it'll be summer, and won't you have rain instead of snow?
No. It's just too darn cold up there. It will snow. And wind, and high-speed wind over water is the most effective way of liberating that moisture from the ocean. You know, when dentists...
So while we're having our spring, they're still having their winter.
It lags, yes. It's still cold up there, and the ice doesn't really go out until May. And by June and July and August, the Beaufort Sea is open. And you can swim there. It's still cold, but that, you know that
you can. You may not want to.
Yeah, that moisture source though is constant, and each year as that polar cap, as the hard core of the ice cap finally melts, and eventually breaks away from Greenland and starts rotating on its own, it will melt even more rapidly.
So far, even in the summer, the polar ice cap is still attached to Greenland.
Yes. But it is loosely attached. So
that's what we're worried about, it melting so much that it's no longer attached to Greenland.
Right. Then it will melt even quicker. Then you have a spinning ice cube in your glass of water, which will melt much more rapidly than one which is stable and stationary.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who wants to cool their drink knows. Just swirl it around. The ice will melt faster.
Exactly.
So the Earth is, of course, always swirling around. And if the ice is loose, it will start melting faster.
Right.
So what year are we talking about that people are thinking that this might happen?
Well, if you...
I'm sure all the meteorologists don't agree on the year, just on the effect.
There's a wide range of dates available, but if you're down to the last 6 feet on average of ice depth, and you're losing ice at 2 to 4 inches a year, you're talking by the year 2020 at the earliest, you're going to have significant ice loss and large periods of time that the Arctic is in fact open. There'll still be chunks of ice and icebergs floating around, and some of them will be substantial.
So as early as 2020, I remember seeing a date of 2018.
That's right. That's
right. So we're talking 13 years.
It's very close. My own view is that the polar cap will break away from Greenland in about the next 10 years. Maybe the Las Vegas bookies will make some odds on that and see if they can collect some money. Who knows?
So the process will begin about 10 years from now.
Yes.
You're thinking.
It's happening right now.
And when it finishes, it's when the process finishes and the ice cap is gone that this ice age will begin.
Then it will begin in earnest. Then you'll have significant snow accumulating around the edges of the Arctic and isolating the polar high from the westerlies that will tend to slow it down, which means wind.
Okay, what did you just say?
Okay. There is a almost permanent high pressure system that sits on top of the pole. It is cold. And it rotates along with the Earth's rotation from east to west. It is constant. And if you isolate that by building a mountain between that high and the westerly flowing wind that flows across the United States and Canada.
Okay, so the prevailing winds being from west to east. Our weather comes
right.
from... Right. You know,
our weather comes right. from west to east, but in... On
the pirates get rained out, the Mets will be rained out the next day.
Exactly. But that's here where we live. Up on the fringes of the Arctic, the weather comes from east to west. And it's those colliding currents that slow down that air,
uh-huh.
provide for a lot of turbulence, and wind is turbulence. And wind over that water will strip it of its moisture, like a dentist trying to get rid of the moisture on your tooth. He doesn't use a heat lamp. He uses wind. He uses air because air will strip that moisture out. And once the wind increases, the polar water will freeze less rapidly than it normally would. When you remove a lot of fresh water in the form of snow, the resulting remaining ocean is saltier. That salt ocean will freeze with more difficulty. The longer
right,
you have
open water...
Which
is why people put salt to melt ice in the winter, because the salt...
Right. We do it on a microscopic
right.
scale. You have to imagine a 3,000-mile lake.
Right. The saltier the water, the lower the temperature you need to freeze it again.
Exactly.
And so if you're taking out pure water in the form of rain and snow, you are then making the ocean saltier and saltier.
You're slowly increasing the salinity of the ocean.
So the likelihood of the ice cap coming back is less and less and less every time the snow comes down.
Right. And again, the pack ice will form later instead of earlier and melt earlier instead of later. So it's like a machine.
So when the snow starts every winter, will be successively earlier.
Exactly. Now, the implications on a global scale are really devastating, because go 100 years into the future with sharply shorter growing seasons, you have billions of people in Asia who are just on the edge of making it. You know, China is doing very well these days. It's industrialized. Its people are being fed. You take out 25% of their arable land, and that whole balance shifts, and that's going to be true in Canada.
You take away a month or two of growing season, and you've got less crops.
Right. And that
so we have food shortages in our future to go with all this.
Well, this is a sort of a Malthusian type thing, but we're going to be making it a little bit more difficult because we're accelerating that global warming, which is making that ice melt quicker than it normally would have. In other words, it might have gone on for another 1,000 years before it finally disappeared. We are literally putting the blowtorch underneath the ice cap, and we're doing it in all different ways. If you go, for instance, to Dallas in the summer, and you walk on the street, you hear this constant whirr, and what you're hearing are the air conditioners literally burning fossil fuels to produce electricity that are pumping heat from the buildings into the atmosphere. So we're warming the atmosphere in one part, and we're burning fossil fuels to do it, which is also contributing to global warming. Mm-hmm. Every city in the United States is like that in the summer. We didn't have that capacity in the 1800s. We weren't doing that kind of acceleration of global warming. Of course, look at all the cars that are spewing greenhouse gases in the air, too.
So in the 10 minutes we have left, what do we do about it?
I think we need to get on the wavelength that there is global warming. It's not fiction. There are people who are still denying it today. They are very, very wrong and actually being very counterproductive. On a global basis, the way that Ewing realized that the ice age ended was when so much fresh water had been taken out of the oceans and dumped on the land in the form of snow from that open Arctic, that the warm water was not able to get up there anymore, and the Arctic froze, and the snow stopped. And then for the next 100,000 years, the ice slowly melted.
So you're talking about that current between
Greenland
and Europe. Yeah.
Now, artificially, we could cleanly dam that channel. It would be like building five mountain ranges. It's a massive project. It makes the pyramids look like a sandbox project. However, slowing that current would keep the Arctic frozen and stop those glaciers from forming. So that is the long-term solution.
So we're talking about a gigantic underwater dam?
Yes. Huge. Basically a mountain range upside down in the water between Spitsbergen and Greenland.
We're talking miles long.
That's right.
All underwater. And what would that do to, where would the water go then?
Well, the water would just circle. So, you know, the Gulf Stream will continue circling around. It just won't go all the way up to the pole. It will go off to Norway. Norway may end up getting a little bit warmer as a result. But, you know, this is not a clear-cut choice. There are a lot of countries in the world that would vehemently protest this because the desert regions, Israel, Arabia, North Africa, would see their chance of changing the climate to benefit them disappearing. They used to be the land of milk and honey. They were, and when the last ice age was there, and making the Hanging Gardens of Babylon one of the seven wonders of the world. They aren't there anymore. It's all desert. So there are parts of the world which will benefit, and there are parts which are going to be...
So the ice age would cool climate the way it's now getting warmer. It would then get cooler.
Yes.
And so that would benefit the hot regions of the Earth. So they're going to fight against trying to
reverse this ice age.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to fight against it. They're just not going to be very enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. And maybe for them, for good reasons. But once this the polar cap is gone, it's an enormous undertaking.
Was there any way to stop or slow down global warming so that we could push this event back?
Unfortunately, that time passed in the 1800s. The way we are handling our planet right now, you're not going to get people to turn in every third car or shut their air conditioners off. And that process was going to happen anyway. We just made it happen quicker. Even if you stop right now...
Well, thousands of years quicker.
About 1,000 years acceleration, I think. And what we do in the next 10 years will not stop the polar cap from melting in the next 20. And that's the key. So what you have to do is say, look beyond it and say, what can we do to help it freeze over again so that that huge moisture source doesn't...
So all the insulating of houses so we don't need to put our air conditioners on as much, you don't think that's enough of an effect?
It might slow it down slightly. I don't think so. This is a natural process that we have unnaturally abetted. It was going to happen anyway. And right now it's like a car going over a cliff. The wheels have already left the cliff. And you can't just put a string on the bumper and try to slow it down. It's going over. So now what do you do knowing it's going over? How do you handle the next step? And we have to look at that 100 years in the future when there is a lot of snow and ice forming and not melting and the climate is changing.
If the polar ice cap does melt in the next 10 years, how long will it take for those glaciers to build up to the point where we can see them in New York State?
Oh, gosh. No, you're not going to see them in anybody's lifetime in the world today. You will get some more snow accumulation. Northern Canada will see literally mountains of ice build up. And then over the next hundreds of years, they will slowly move out.
Hundreds, plural.
Yes, right. Nature doesn't stop on a dime and turn around. Even though the polar cap melting in geological terms is quite sudden. In our human life terms, it occurs over a lifetime.
So how much snow per year are we talking about?
Well, during even a local lake effect that we have in Buffalo or Syracuse, we can accumulate snow at 4 inches an hour. 4 inches an hour, 24 hours a day, and you start compressing it. You can build up a few miles in a couple of years. Keep in mind, in summer, it will melt again. But now you have a base to build on, and each succeeding year will be higher as long as that Arctic Ocean stays open. And there's nothing that can stop that other than freezing that polar cap. And it's not something you can turn on the refrigerator and say, okay, get colder. You need to adjust the natural process that's occurring to melt it.
How about blocking the wind?
We don't have the technology or the physics involved in blocking wind. You're talking about the rotation of the Earth, which is responsible for that wind.
Oh, so we have to stop the rotation of the Earth.
Yeah, and that's not going to happen. Not going to happen. But, from a conceptual standpoint, you're right. The wind has to be blocked. But it's not the wind that has to be blocked. It's the wind's access to moisture that needs to be blocked. And by keeping that polar cap frozen, we're able to block its access to moisture. And even that is a huge undertaking for our little human beings on this planet.
How big is the Arctic Ocean that we would have to be covering the moisture up to stop all this?
Well, we'd have to do what we have today. Basically, you're talking millions of square miles. The Arctic Ocean,
about the size of the United States?
Yes, it's about the size of the United States. And
Cover that up, and you can stop the...
Right, and now it is actually covered with pack ice and ice, and there are open parts now. You have to stop what is melting it, and which are the warm water currents. And those are actually, you can't stop them, but you can shift them so that they don't go underneath the polar cap. Probably the one solution that mankind has to seriously consider. And once the cap melts, by the way, it'll be very obvious. As Ewing said, this is like a steamroller. We'll see what's happening, and hopefully humankind will have the the ability and the courage to take this natural process and slightly alter it to preserve life the way we know it.
Well, I opened the show with some good news, and I think I've left it with some bad news. But thank you, Time Weissmuller, for coming on to Ecologic here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. And Tom is a retired meteorologist, worked with NASA, was the president of the NYU Alumni Association, and has been lecturing on global warming for years. And the book that you have coming out?
It's called The Colder Side of Global Warming.
And so you heard it here first, folks. So I'll go out with Ray Corona talking about a fun little critter from the last ice age. And then stay tuned for your community bulletin board, and then Gary Null at noon.
I can't imagine what it was like to soar so majestically free. A blanket of feathers on 20-foot wings, beyond all allegiance to the land and sea. May we rise as high as a bird in the sky, see what the redwoods can see. Share the earth with love and respect, live in harmony. The Teraton birds killed for their food, as predators prowl everywhere. Ice ages nearly extinguished all life, but warm days returned, new hope filled the air. May we rise as high as a bird in the sky, see what the redwoods can see. Share the earth with love and respect, live in harmony. There were no fences, no military bases, no pesticide poisons, no arms races. Big ancient birds are forever gone, their ghosts fly only in dreams. Strange magical creatures that we've never seen, whose shadows once loomed over woods and streams. May we rise as high as a bird in the sky, see what the redwoods can see. Share the earth with love and respect, live in harmony.
This is Susan Lee of You and Your Money. We've moved up an hour to Friday mornings from 10:30 to 11. Join us on You and Your Money, new time slot, Friday mornings from 10:30 to 11 for your journey to financial balance and financial health. We can make it. That's You and Your Money in a new time slot, Friday mornings from 10:30 to 11.
The following is a list of events from the WBAI Community Bulletin Board.
The Upper West Side Recycling Center and the Interfaith Assembly on Homelessness and Housing are holding their 12th annual Upper Broadway Fall Festival on Saturday, October 9th from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Broadway from 110th to 118th Street in Manhattan. Over 200 craftspersons, antique dealers, and artists will participate, and there will be exhibits of collectibles and Latin American crafts, as well as displays and exhibits from local and national nonprofit organizations. For more information, call 212-764-7000. 212-764-6330. That's 212-764-6330.
Noted historians James Oliver Horton and Lois Horton will present Slavery and the Making of America, a companion volume to the four-part PBS series airing in February 2005, which illuminates the human...